welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. I'm here to talk to you about the National Football League. It is Monday, November 6th, 2017. We are almost exactly halfway through the NFL season. I know it feels like it just got started yesterday, but we are halfway done with the NFL regular season as we hit week 10. So I think today, in lieu of recapping decent, I guess, in some ways, week 9, some blowouts, some interesting games, I guess, but not the best week by any means. Certainly not that sort of incredible Seattle-Houston game like we had a week ago. We're going to recap the first half of the NFL season, and we're going to take a look forward towards the second half of the campaign. And joining me to do that is Will Brinson, frequent contributor to the show of CBS. Will, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. In fact, I wasn't wondering, but somebody was like, when are you going to be back on Barnwell's show?
Really?
And I was like, I guess I haven't been on it in a while, but I think I came on after week one. So this is actually kind of fitting because it's like a nice little reset, right?
We knew nothing
in week one, and now we get to proclaim that all the things that we know. I will say that even though those games in week nine, Monday night pending, were not great, and there were a lot of blowouts, I think in a weird way they sort of revealed this hierarchy, maybe at least in the NFC, of teams that are going to fight and jockey for playoff position down the stretch.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I do think it's going to be a tight squeeze. We're going to get to that. I think let's hit that after the break. Let's talk about the second half of the season and the playoff picture and all that stuff in the second segment of the show. In the first half, that's what I think we should do. Obviously, I think everyone will probably do in a midseason awards column this week. It is what we say in the business is an easy column. It is a nice, relaxing thing to do where you just give your opinions and everyone has one of those. So I wanted to go through the midseason award candidates with you because I think it's a really fascinating race in a lot of places. I think there's some favorites, and I think we may, you know, there may be some places where we agree, but I think there are a lot of places, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where there's not really like an obvious candidate for, you know, or certainly not a candidate that I don't think either of us would be able to say is 100% across the league confirmed as the favorite. So that sound good?
Yeah, and in fact, in anticipation of this very podcast, I'm trying just to be a better human in general, more prepared. I would have read your excellent midseason awards column and prepared my own list of guys to fit into those slots. So we can just run through that.
This is so easy. This is just a breeze.
It's a layout.
Yeah. That sounds good to me. So let's just do that. Let's start with this. I gave my considerations in the column today, but I also have more to say than I said in the column. And certainly I want to see if you can talk me out of some of these. I feel like that's totally plausible. Alden Gonzalez talked me out of a lot of things last week on a previous episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. So that is not the new theme, is to convince me that I am wrong about things. Let's start with Defensive Rookie of the Year. Obviously, there isn't that sort of standout player. Myles Garrett probably would have been the favorite for the year, but injuries have kept him from really impacting as much as you might have hoped for. He looks great when he's healthy, but high ankle sprain cost him a bunch of games at the beginning of the year. Concussion prevented him from playing in that London game against the Vikings. So he's going to be healthy, you'd figure, and he's going to have a bigger impact over the second half of the season. But it's hard to picture a rookie on a team that might go 0-16 winning Defensive Rookie of the Year. Do you think Garrett has a viable chance?
Yes, but an unlikely shot. I think you probably agree with me when I say that these awards a lot of times are subject unfairly to second half performance.
Oh, sure.
And so, I mean, yeah, it's just the nature of the business. You know, what have you done for me lately? Recency bias, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, like if Garrett were to rip off, hypothetically, what would he have, an 8-game stretch or 7-game stretch, whatever it is, with 10 sacks, then maybe, or even 8 sacks, then maybe. But I think there have been enough performances thus far that on a winless Browns team, it's going to be a hard sell.
Mm-hmm. So who are your top candidates for the first half of the season?
My pick was, and it remains after an impressive win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Marshawn Lattimore, the Saints cornerback, rookie cornerback, really been a nice find. I think one of the most interesting things about this particular draft is, and you know, this is too early to to pass judgment on. I just find it fascinating that a lot of really talented, productive, big school defensive players. I'm looking at you, Marshawn Lattimore. I'm looking at you, Derek Barnett. I'm looking at you, Malik Hooker, and I know he's hurt, but big names, guys, analysts, draft picks, everybody light coming out of college fell because of three wide receivers who went in the top 10. And I think that those three wide receivers in John Ross, Corey Davis, and Mike Williams have a combined like a 75 yards. It's not good, right? But I think Lattimore in particular has been a big reason why the Saints defense has emerged as perhaps the biggest surprise in the NFL, that this team that is perennially terrible would actually be a pretty good and pretty impressive unit, balanced out by this rushing attack from the Saints. And this, it's a bizarre world Saints team, and Lattimore is a big part of it. It looks like he may have been an excellent find. I think he has the lowest graded, lowest passer rating against in the NFL right now.
Wow. Pro
Football Focus.
Wow. I mean, that's, you know, he's certainly a legit star from day one in terms of how he's playing for the Saints. And given that they lost Delvin Bro before the season to a fractured fibula, it looks like he might not even play all year, given that he had a setback in trying to return. Hard to imagine they would be anywhere near where they are right now in defense, because you have Ken Crawley's playing well. Their 2016 undrafted free agent who got some time this year moves into the starting lineup. PJ Williams, an oft-hurt Florida State guy from a couple of years ago, was sort of on the fringes, and he's been there, you know, I think third cornerback here or there. But you're looking at basically Devontae Harris, you're looking at Justin Hardy, guys who are, you know, more undrafted free agents who would be playing meaningful roles were it not for Lattimore. So did miss a little bit with an injury, I believe a concussion earlier this year, but I mean, he's playing at a super high level, and I don't think there's anyone, I don't think that it would be wrong to pick him over my pick, which is Tre'Davious White in Buffalo. I think they're both playing at a super high level, and that's really kind of impressive given just how frequently, you know, not only given that no one had expectations for those defenses heading into the season, but also it's so rare to see a cornerback playing at a high level as a rookie.
Yeah, and would you factor in with Buffalo in particular that the Bills decided to trade Ronald Darby, and with the idea being Tre'Davious White comes in and he pairs up with Darby, and they have these two corners. They trade Darby out, and Tre'Davious White's just gonna, all right, enjoy your island, buddy, in this McDermott scheme. I have no qualms with taking Tre'Davious White, and I think that those two guys are. Am I missing? I feel like those two guys, and maybe Jamal Adams, who sort of, so it's almost harder to quantify the say maybe the safety production on a team like the Jets. But I mean, I think those three guys would probably be the top picks. Derek Barnett having a really nice year, but certainly overshadowed by those Eagles pass rushers. But yeah, look, Tre'Davious White in that defense, in a team that looked kind of like it was tanking. And they're suddenly surprise winners of more games than certainly Vegas, almost more games than Vegas thought they would win.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the tough part with Jamal Adams is that, like you said, not only is it harder to quantify a safety's impact because you just don't see him on the ball perhaps quite as frequently, but you have Marcus May playing next to him, who's another rookie who's playing really good football as well. So I don't know how necessarily you pick between Adams and May, and I wonder if it comes to an actual voting situation, if you're going to have people who say, yeah, I think Adams is the better player at all, I think May's the better player, you know, they're going to be stealing some votes from one another. Are there any other front seven pieces for you that stand out as possible candidates, given that you mentioned Garrett, who, again, it's going to be tough for him to kind of make up time lost and to come, you know, coming back from a mediocre team, mediocre might be generous, a bad team, doing well. You mentioned Derek Barnett, who's playing very well as part of the rotation for Philadelphia. Anyone else in the front seven who stands out as a possible candidate to you?
You could go with Carl Lawson, I suppose. Mm-hmm. He's been really good for the Bengals. And, again, like, they've got a lot of pieces there. And since he's been so bad that it would not be a – it certainly wouldn't be a surprise if he sort of got lost in the mix there. I'm trying to think. And Jordan Willis, of course, maybe he'll split votes too. I mean, but on the split vote, the split vote thing, can you imagine traveling back in time to the day after the draft and being like, by the way, guys, I know the Jets took safeties early. They're going to split votes for Defensive Rookie of the Year, just so you know. And the Jets have the Jets have 5 wins? They don't have 5 wins, do they? That's crazy.
They have 4?
They have 4 wins. They're 4-5. They'll be at midway point of the year. The Jets will have a negative 16-point differential with 4 wins, and their 2 safeties they drafted early. We'll be talking about them splitting votes. I mean, nobody. I mean, you would be laughed out of the building. But yeah, I think the Bengals guys quantify. Am I missing anybody? I could be missing somebody off the top of my head, but to me, those are the primary picks that I've got.
What do you think about T.J. Watt?
Oh yeah, duh. That was an obvious one. Thanks for giving me the layup, and I'm sorry I bricked it.
Watt
definitely qualifies, and I think that Watt is the best case for that Myles Garrett scenario that we're talking about, which is down the stretch. I guess I didn't think about it because the Steelers are on bye this week, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So I think that you could see T.J. Watt have a monster year, or a monster performance down the stretch. The Steelers end up with one of the best records in football. Mm-hmm. They're on, you know, you talk about seeing them on the ball, where you're going to see him a lot in primetime games, high-profile games. If he's making plays and there's not a big candidate, then I would see Watt as certainly, and in fact, Watt is the guy that you predicted would win it, right? So that is a good prediction. I like it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's why you're a frequent contributor to the Bill Barnwell Show. for the same reasons you just mentioned, I think it's going to be, obviously the last name helps. I mean, in terms of picking who is most likely to get attention, having the name Watt is going to help in this discussion. That's just the reality of the situation. I'm not saying that he should play better because of it, but it is going to help people, especially people who aren't watching a ton of tape, which some of the voters, I think it's fair to say, are not exactly, you know, grinding on the old 22 from week to week. And I do think Watt's a good player, and he's going to be in a very, he's had a very visible situation. The Steelers, I think, are my pick to be at least the best team in the AFC by the end of the year, if not necessarily the best team in football, competing with the Eagles. I do think that Watt is going to play a meaningful role the rest of the way. He could, you know, give snaps to James Harrison here or there, but he's going to be, I think, an every down player for them. So I do think in the long run, you are probably going to see production enough from Watt if he stays healthy that I could see him nipping Lattimore or White to the award, even if I think Lattimore or White might be the better player in a vacuum, which, to be honest, at this point of the year so far, I do think they are.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And look, if Watt, you know, again, he's got four sacks, four passes defense, an interception. You know, if he piles up these baby J.J. Watt stats, yes. I mean, and has I mean, if he gets double digit sacks, sometimes it just seems like the way that these votes go. And again, like as good as Lattimore has been, and as good as White has been, if T.J. Watt ends up with double digit sacks, if that's not out of the realm of possibility, I would guess that he will win that award.
Yeah. What about offensive rookie of the year? And I think you have to answer this a couple of different ways. Not only is it who has been the best offensive rookie of the year through the first half of the season, and then who is likely to be the offensive rookie of the year at the end of the season? Because I think you can give two very different answers to those two questions.
Well, for the first, you know, it was Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson leapfrogged. I mean, just literally leapt over Kareem Hunt as we approached the midway point. And then, of course, he tragically seems maybe a bit of a stretch, but they really did stink. It did stink that Deshaun Watson tore his ACL because he was, and I think maybe it was Greg Rosenthal said that. I can't remember where I thought I heard him say it, but I'm not sure where. But it was like he was what this season needed, you know?
Yeah. Like, for sure.
Like we needed something out of nowhere to liven up this season and really make it special. And Deshaun Watson was that. And the Texans, who employed Brock Osweiler and Brian Hoyer and Tom Savage the last 2 years, were one of the most fun offenses to watch with Deshaun Watson playing. DeAndre Hopkins had turned back into a monster. Will Fuller was playing exceptional football, catching touchdowns left and right. Mm-hmm. And now not so much. And Watson, to me, if he played the full season, was going to win the award handily. Mm-hmm. Now I think you have to say it's Hunt. But if Andy Reid keeps reducing Hunt's snap count and snap percentage and Hunt doesn't rip off a bunch of runs, it's gonna be easy for somebody to creep up and steal it from him. Can I want to float two names that I just thought about. Mm-hmm. So, what about Harrison Butker and Jay Kelly? I'm not kidding, really. They're like, these guys have been lights out kickers. If Hunt doesn't have a, you know, I mean, if Hunt struggles in the second half, is it opening up for something weird like that?
I don't think so. I think there are too many skill position players who are having good seasons that even if I can't imagine how effective Harrison Butker or Jake Elliott would have to be to justify. Like, Harrison Butker, has he missed a kick yet?
I don't think so. Not that the Panthers put him on the practice squad. The Chiefs claimed him after Kyra Santos went down. I met him at a combine really randomly, mm-hmm. and he's like 3.8 like chemical engineering degree from Georgia Tech. And like an upstanding kid with like a good head on his shoulders. I don't really think they'll win either because you have Leonard Fournette and you have Hunt. And one of those guys, surely one of those guys is going to do it. I think Hunt to me is primed at, like, if I were in fantasy, I would buy low on him because people are sort of getting nervous. He's so explosive that at some point the Chiefs are going to have to go back to making him the focal point if they want to win some football games.
Yeah, it does seem like he's so locked into a role, right, where every week he's getting the football, whether it's as a runner or as a receiver. I mean, obviously he can get hurt, but any of these guys can get hurt. There's no reason to, pick against Hunt because he's likely to get injured. I mean, you would figure he's going to be playing a meaningful role. The Chiefs are going to be playing meaningful football, of course, the rest of the way, and maybe the rest in week 17 here or there, but he's going to be obviously a focal point of that offense. In terms of the kickers, are obviously the sort of like an out of left field candidate, even someone like, Mitch Trubisky. I just think we have too many running backs who are playing really well to give the award away from one of them. I mean, I do think that Evan Ingram's playing very well in terms of receiving as a rookie. I think it's almost unprecedented in terms of how much production he's getting, obviously, with the Giants down to Travis King as their number one red receiver, it looks like at this point. I think Juju Smith-Schuster's having a good year. Cooper Kupp's having a good year, but none of those guys are going to compete just because we have so many running backs who are playing meaningful roles in their offense, where you mentioned Kareem Hunt, Leonard Fournette, obviously, even though he has perhaps a habit of not making appearances at team photos, which I didn't see that one coming. I know that Tom Coughlin is Tom Coughlin. I know he's very particular about the culture they want to start. And didn't impact the Jaguars last week. They did beat, who were they playing yesterday? I don't remember anymore.
Cincinnati. They handily beat them.
They comfortably handled Cincinnati in a game that was, I was going to say marred, but I would say actually livened up perhaps by the Jalen Ramsey, AJ Green brawl. But, you figure they're not going to punish Fournette pass this week, and you figure he's going to be getting huge chunks of yardage certainly a huge part of the workload and steady chunks of yardage for that offense, which certainly looks like they are in great shape to win the AFC South, which would, I think, be a very sort of useful part of Fournette's resume. And, I mean, even elsewhere, Alvin Kamara is playing a big role for the Saints. It looks like he's Drew Brees' focal point of the offense some weeks. Even Christian McCaffrey, who you'd figure is going to play a bigger role on offense after the Kelvin Benjamin trade. I mean, it just seems like one of those four guys is going to be the pick at the end of the year.
Yeah, and again, like when we talk about Kareem Hunt, we talk about him slowing down. He hadn't found the end zone lately. Mm-hmm. I mean, he still leads the NFL in rushing yards and yards from scrimmage. Like, he's still, I believe, if I'm going to crunch the quick math, he's at 125.7 yards from scrimmage per game.
Wow. So,
that's a huge season. If he does that over the course of the season and he finds the end zone a few more times, but we really are, it's like when we talk about Watt with the sacks, we're so red zonified that it's, I think sometimes it is difficult, even when we do this for a living, and I consider you and I to be fairly, not open-minded, but like, we're not going to be like, oh, he's got 9 touchdowns. You know what I mean? you're able to look past the surface level. I mean, sometimes sometimes it's hard when you don't see Kareem Hunt walking into the end zone and it doesn't register in your mind as a highlight that, that he's actually still having a monster season.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think that, and again, touchdowns do matter. If a guy has a bunch of touchdowns, it doesn't hurt. It's not exactly a negative on his resume by any means, but just in watching the Chiefs play on a week-to-week basis, Hunt plays such a huge role in that offense that, even if he doesn't have, 15 touchdowns at the end of the year, you can't really discount how effective he's been for them. If it's not Hunt, I mean, are you taking Fournette? Are you taking McCaffrey? Are you taking Kamara? Someone else?
If I had to pick right now, I think it would be if I had to pick for the end of the season non-Hunt version, I think I would go Kamara because he is – if you watch him against Tampa Bay, he is everything that they want and need in that New Orleans offense. Mm-hmm. And this is not a knock on Adrian Peterson, who just carried the ball 36 times for 150 yards at the age of 33 or whatever, 31 or whatever it is. But or maybe he's 35. I can't even remember anymore. I can't remember anything today for some reason. Kamara is exactly what the Saints need on offense. He is tailor made for a Drew Brees, Sean Payton offense in terms of being able to, you know, grind it out between the tackles enough and also just be an explosive and dynamic weapon in the passing game. And you saw that yesterday. I mean, he scores twice. Once on the ground and once through the air, and if he racked up 150 plus total yards, 86 rushing and 68 receiving, something in that range. I mean, this is what you want with the Saints, and it's bizarre that they even thought, hey, we need Adrian Peterson when you know they had this guy. I guess they went out. It's just weird. Like, this is the guy who should be the feature back for this Saints offense, coupled with Mark Ingram and. You know, slow it down, run the ball effectively. They haven't run the ball this well since 2009 when they won the Super Bowl. And, you know, it's helping their defense because the defense doesn't have to spend time on the field. And I think the Saints could easily end up with one of the three or four best records in football. And if that happens and Cameron's scoring touchdowns and piling up yards, he could surpass Hunt.
Yeah, I do think that's totally feasible. I mean, he's been on a per-carry basis, maybe the most efficient running back in football. He's averaging 6 yards per rush, and it's not as if he had one big run, and that's, you know, kind of just skewing his numbers. His longest run of the year is 25 yards. I mean, he's getting steady chunks of yardage on the ground, and certainly given the way that the Saints are playing, where they're not just sort of – it's not that nonsense balance thing where it's just like, oh, we're going to, you know, commit to the run. Like, they're actually running the ball more frequently and more effectively and then taking – using that to take some of the pressure off Brees, who's not – to be honest with you, playing his best football of his life right now at the moment. So he can certainly play a big role in the offense. I think that's totally feasible. Let's move on. We have a couple more to get to. Briefly, I'm not that excited about this award. I never find it interesting, but do you have any preference on comeback player of the year?
No, I agreed with most of your assessment. I picked Todd Gurley. The thing with comeback players, like, what are you coming back from? You know, right. Like, do we weigh injury more than a down season? Because it's not, you know, it's like Todd Gurley's. Remember when Philip Rivers won it? It's like, what's he coming back from? He played all 16 games, and like he had like 30 touchdowns.
He was coming back from Norv Turner, apparently.
Right. Well, see, exactly, Todd Gurley coming back from Jeff Fisher.
Yes,
and so I will go with Todd Gurley, but. Earl Thomas would be a fantastic selection because of his ability to come back from, you know, from the injury that he suffered and to play at a high level. I go either way. I don't performance, whatever. Both are good choices for me.
Do you think it's feasible, perhaps even unfair, maybe, to pick Jared Goff as comeback player of the year?
Well, but the problem is he was never back in the first place, right? So. Because you can't be back unless you can't come back unless you were there.
Yeah.
I understand. See, this is why we need two awards, Bill. One should be, like, making the leap award. Like, Goff totally gets that award because he has, you know what I mean? Like nobody's going to give somebody a comeback award if they weren't good in the first place.
Yeah.
You can't get a comeback award if you're a breakout star because you were never there to begin with. That's the problem with the naming of the award. I like where your head's at with it, but I think the very stringent linguistic restrictions involved in the name keep Goff from winning at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. You know, you have to be good and then bad to be good again, right? And come back. You can't just go from being
You're rewarded for stinking. Like, it doesn't, like, if Gurley had run for 1,000 yards last year and 20 touchdowns, he wouldn't be eligible for the comeback player.
Where do you think Gurley ranks right now in terms of running backs around the league? I mean, how many other running backs do you think, when healthy, you'd put ahead of Gurley in terms of the running back discussion?
I think for me, it's – make sure I'm not missing somebody. I think it's – it's Le'Veon, Zeke, and Gurley right now with – the asterisk that David Johnson would be in that group as the big four if he was healthy and we could see him playing. And I think, you know, so I look at it like a fantasy draft situation. Next year, the first four guys taken are Le'Veon, Gurley, Zeke, assuming suspension is served, and David Johnson in some sort of order. And to me, those four guys are in a very separate tier from everyone else.
Would you put Devontae Freeman in that group?
No, I would actually put Kareem Hunt ahead of Freeman, I think.
Interesting. I don't disagree with you. I think that's totally plausible. I I'd be intrigued. I want to see what happens with this over the second half with Fournette and Hunt. I feel like they could, you know, approach that group if not necessarily have enough data to hit that group. So it's interesting. But I do.
Sean McCoy
you.
Could be involved in that as well. I think.
That's true. I think that's fair. There are certain weeks where I think LeSean McCoy is the best running back in the history of football, and certain weeks where I don't know what if he's ever played football before. So I it's hard to gauge him. I feel like.
You're right. I agree. I now I'm just like picturing him carrying the football like my wife's friend used to likes to carry toddlers. Like,
oh no!
Secure the child, please, Grace. Please.
You have to have Tom Coughlin teach her how to secure the child because he has significant experience as a great 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 grandfather.
That's right.
Let's run through defensive player of the year. This was my toughest choice because I don't. You know, I do think there are plenty of great defensive players this year, but I don't know if there's anyone who's really kind of, you know, outpaced the rest of the pack.
I think that there's another vote-splitting situation to be had here as well when you start to look at the Jacksonville Jaguars. And it's hard for me to get away from the Jaguars when I think about defensive player of the year because of just how important that defense is to what they're doing. I mean, it's everything. Fournette's been great, and Chris Ivory filled in well, and Blake Bortles has not been an explosive stick of turnover creating TNT, which is great. But it's the defense that is doing this, and the two guys that I really focus in on when I'm trying to narrow it down are Calais Campbell, who is – look, the Jaguars have for years invested a lot of money in the free agency market. This one panned out, and with 10 sacks at the midway point. And then Jalen Ramsey, he has the third lowest passer rating of anybody thrown against, according to Pro Football Focus. Jimmy Smith was actually number one, Marshawn Lattimore two, and Jalen Ramsey three with a 42 quarterback rating against. He's gotten 44 targets and only given up 20 catches and 222 yards. That is pretty impressive with two picks. So I think you can make a case for Ramsey securing on the back end, but I also think if you're doing that, you have to inherently give credit to Campbell, and that becomes difficult, which is why the two guys that have the most that have the big sack numbers on in better individual situations, DeMarcus Lawrence and Everson Griffin, are probably the leaders, although I personally picked Jalen Ramsey.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's just I think he brings this attitude. I think the fascinating thing, Bill, is if you could – okay, Zeke Elliott, we agree, is a transcendent running back, right?
Yep, sure.
But would you definitely take Ezekiel Elliott over Jalen Ramsey if you were building a team in a vacuum and you just had that draft class?
Boy, that's a tough question because, you know, with Zeke, obviously, he's a great player. And I can't say this without taking something away from Zeke, but I don't mean to. Like, he's in a great situation to succeed. He has a run-friendly quarterback who creates holes for him. He has a great offensive line around him. You know, would Zeke be Zeke if he were playing on the Browns? I think it's fair to say maybe he would not be quite as effective of a player. And Jalen Ramsey, last year, did not really have that great of a pass rush in front of him. He had Prince Amukamara at cornerback across from him, who's a very solid number two cornerback, but not AJ Bouye. But right now, he's a great cornerback next to him. He has a great pass rush in front of him. And of course, he's making the pass rush better as well, but he's in a great situation to succeed as well. So I don't... this is a very tough question. It depends on... let me ask you this. Am I answering the question for the Cowboys, or am I answering the question for the Jags?
I hadn't thought that through. I think, let's say for the Cowboys.
For the Cowboys, I'd take Jalen Ramsey because I do think it's easier for the Cowboys to find a great running back than it is for them to find a number one cornerback. On an average team, I might... Man, that's a tough question. On an average team, I don't know. I think you can make a choice for either player and I would be okay with it. I think in the long run, maybe I'd say Ramsey just because cornerbacks do get paid more in free agency than running back. So I think over, you know, the chances of Ramsey being a great player in the league in 6 years to me are a lot higher, not a lot higher, but they're certainly higher than it is the possibility of Zeke being a great player in this league in 6 years. But man, I think just asking the question kind of, you know, points out how great Ramsey is, you know, in itself.
Yeah. And look, there's not an easy answer because the snap judgment is, well, Zeke, because Zeke is amazing. But you're right. If you can get a cornerback who's going to be a top five corner for potentially the next decade, which is not off the table for Ramsey, or next half decade, that's hard to find out there. My biggest thing when I think about it is, well, the Jaguars drafted Ramsey, and then they went right back and got Fournette. Mm-hmm. And that's a close enough – like, if you put Fournette on the Cowboys, he would be having a monster year too. So I think I would lean Ramsey in a vacuum, but, yeah, look, it's tough. Zeke Elliott's a special player. I just think that that's sort of my argument for just how good Jalen Ramsey's been, although you're the case for – Bouye across from him, Calais Campbell up front, Malik Jackson, you know, Dante Fowler, who got banged up, but all mm-hmm. these guys on that defense does pull away from him a little bit.
So you mentioned kind of there's a big three in terms of pass rushers in Everson Griffin, Calais Campbell, and DeMarcus Lawrence, and you figure those guys are going to be in the discussion the rest of the way. You mentioned Jalen Ramsey. I would have no qualms about him being defensive player of the year. He's going to be in the discussion. Is there anyone outside of those four guys as sort of a wild card who you think could kind of make a leap forward and then be a meaningful part of this discussion when it comes to second half of the year?
Yeah, I think two guys that are in good situations that have notable names. First of all, one-time MVP go-getter, Bobby Wagner. Hashtag never forget. It's truly one of the great moments in postseason voting history. Mm-hmm. Tony Dungy voted for Bobby Wagner, and he's playing excellent football. Sorry, go ahead.
Not only did he vote for Bobby Wagner, he voted for Bobby Wagner in a year where I think Bobby Wagner missed like six games.
He only played eight games the whole season, I think. He came back like midway through the season, yeah. And he gave him an MVP vote. It was incredible.
Oh, God. Sorry, but continue.
No. I remember that was the year the Super Bowl was in New York because obviously the Seahawks went and won it. Anyway, I think you could look at Bobby Wagner if the Seahawks and the loss of the Redskins doesn't help their case, but if the Seahawks defense popped on and caught fire, you could see one of those guys on the Seahawks defense. And I think the other guy that would not be shocking to me would be Luke Kuechly because of his ability to compile obscene statistics. He's a turnover-generating machine. The Panthers' offense is playing okay, but Steve Wilkes is calling fantastic. He's just calling great game plans for this Panthers defense, and they're blitzing like crazy. So it's not out of the realm of possibility for Kuechly to have this, stretch down home where he, piles up like two 10-tackle games, mm-hmm. has a couple of picks, has a couple of sacks, and all of a sudden sort of swings momentum his way. He's won it before, so people are comfortable voting for him in a weird, dumb way. And I don't know, people like giving awards to Kuechly. He gets them. He wins lots of awards because he has incredible counting statistics.
Yeah, I think that's fair. What do you think about Ryan Shazier?
Ooh, I like that. For the same reasons as TJ Watt. Sure, yeah. I love it.
I think for the same reasons, to be honest with you, as Luke Kuechly, in terms of not only do you have that very visible thing, but also, like, he's going to fill out the stat sheet in a lot of different ways, and he's going to make a lot of, he's going to get a lot of tackles. He's going to be an integral part of that defense. And I don't, I don't think he's going to have the numbers maybe quite to the same extent as Kuechly, but if we're sitting here in week 15 and the Panthers and the Steelers are, 12-3 or 12-2 and the Panthers have Kuechly maybe playing better, but he's 9-7 and they have no great pass rusher. I could really imagine a scenario where Shazier gets serious defensive player of the year consideration.
No. It makes a lot of sense. And I guess when I said in the same way that Watt, I meant that if the Steelers go on a big run, one of the best teams, the defense is really taking over. It wouldn't be stunning if they if voters decided to find a guy on there. Now, you could almost, if TJ Watt and Shazier are both playing well, you could see a cross voting split where the defensive rookie steals from the offensive rookie as well. The other guy that I think is, and you know that I won't let this dream of the Chargers winning anything die, but you can't rule out Joey Bosa. He's got 8.5 sacks through his first mm-hmm. 8 games, and this is coming off a 10.5 sack season last year. He's been fantastic. I know his PFF numbers are off the chart in terms of pressures created through the first, I think it's 20 games of his career are better than anybody else, beating Von Miller. It wouldn't be stunning to see Joey Bosa have 10 sacks down the stretch, even 12 sacks if, you know, if things break right, and all of a sudden he's a 20-sack season. And the Chargers would have to make the playoffs, I think, for that to happen and mm-hmm. have a really good defense. But that is to me, he's a viable candidate too.
That's a good that the Chargers don't have to make the playoffs, because I don't think it's ever they're ever going to make the playoffs ever again in the history of football, given that we both support them.
Yeah, we need to have some sort of off-season NFL media summit where we bring people from CBS and NFL media and ESPN and Yahoo, and we all agree to sign this blood oath where we will no longer select the Chargers to be good before the season, so that way the Chargers can blossom away from the curse of whatever we have bestowed upon them.
The great Chargers intervention. We're going to get to our final two awards, the Offensive Player of the Year and MVP award, or Coach of the Year. We'll get to Coach of the Year as well after the break, and we'll talk about the rest of the 2017 season to come, but more Bill Barnwell Show coming here in a moment. But first, if you're a New York resident like I am, it's been a rough year for people who are fans of teams wearing blue. Perhaps you have subjected your partner to some yelling, some shouting, some puzzlement, some very loud, angry puzzlement at the fate of your favorite football team and how they have perhaps failed to meet your expectations during the first half of the season. You probably owe them a pretty nice gift. And I'm not going to tell you what you should do, but just as a suggestion, you may want to consider giving them flowers. I wouldn't say to get blue flowers, perhaps, but the good news is you don't have to get blue flowers from 1-800-Flowers, because they have every possible flower you could imagine. And if you want a particularly good deal, what you could do is order 12 autumn roses for $29.99 and then get a bonus for free. 1-800-Flowers will give you an extra half dozen roses plus a vase to put all those roses in. So again, $29.99 for 12 autumn roses. No blue involved. Red, orange, yellow. No green, perhaps if you are a Giants fan that does not like the Eagles. That's very fair. Just a beautiful array of autumn roses. And it's 18 of them. It's not just 12. And a vase. You don't got to find a souvenir cup from the stadium to put them in. That's not going to be good for your flowers. I don't think souvenir cups are designed to hold flowers. 1-800-Flowers is going to give you 18 roses and a vase for $29.99. And to make that happen, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click the radio icon, and enter my promo code, which is Barnwell, Barnwell. You'll get 18 roses, a vase, $29.99. Just go to 1-800-Flowers.com, code Barnwell. All right, welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, VSPN, joined here by CBS's Will Brinson. We are picking some award candidates from the first half of the NFL season, and then we're going to get to the second half of the year to come and the playoff picture in the NFL. But Will, we have three more awards to get to. What do you think about Coach of the Year? I mean, in my column, I mentioned it seemed to me like a two-person race in terms of Sean McVay in Los Angeles and Doug Peterson, who's done such a great job with the Eagles in the NFC. Are there any other coaches you think belong in the discussion, at least so far?
Yeah, I have actually two more names that I would throw out there. Mm-hmm. One I voted for our CBS Awards last week, and we say we shouldn't react in a week-to-week fashion, but I would now take McVay right now if I had to switch, and I had Sean McDermott of the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I took him over McVay was that I felt like the pile of chicken mess that he was given was less appetizing to begin with than what McVay had, and yes, he really turned it into at least an edible pile of chicken salad. And I thought it was hard to do. I like the Bills to go under their total of 6.5 this year, and they're not going to do it. They have 5 wins now. They laid a really bad egg on the road against the Jets, and that was disappointing given how well they've been coached. And they could lose a lot of games in the second half of the season, because I think, and LeSean McCoy has flat out said this, so I don't mind saying it, they don't have as much talent as other teams. Mm-hmm. You know, they are winning because they are playing good, technically sound football, taking advantage of certain situations, and they're well coached. Sometimes situations like that, we saw it with the Falcons a few years ago with Dan Quinn after a hot start. Sometimes situations like that can unravel quickly, and it wouldn't be surprising if the Bills lost a lot of games. So I think I would lean McVay. The other guy, Doug Peterson, of course, is good. Todd Bowles, I think, deserves recognition.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like 4 wins for the Jets. He midway through the season, he's eclipsed his win total, and they could easily have 2 or 3 more wins if they hadn't played poorly down the stretch. He just got them playing hard. We thought they were going 0-16. It's a very impressive effort from the Jets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with any of those. I think it'd be really cool if Todd Bowles won Coach of the Year. I don't know that it's, they tend to reward wild success more so than approaching competency, but I do think that he probably deserves more consideration given that it would have been so easy for that team to just play poorly and then quit, you know, and obviously that's not been the case. Bowles has really done a great job of inspiring them to play competent and at some points even impressive football. Anyone else I think we should talk about in this vote? Would you consider any would you be willing to consider Doug Marrone if the Jags win 10 games and win the division?
Yeah, yes. That's a great candidate. If the Jaguars win 10 games, it's going to be hard for Doug Marrone not to get it, assuming that the Eagles don't go 15-1. You know, if you go 15-1, you're going to win the award. Or even, I think 13-3 is probably going to get Doug Peterson the nod. Mm-hmm. But if the Jaguars win 10 games, Marrone, if we're doing it based on the idea of wins above or like, you know, value above average,
yep,
or wins above replacement level, and Doug Marrone deserves credit because he took what Gus Bradley had, no disrespect to Gus Bradley, but he has won significantly more than, I think he's won more games than Gus Bradley won as Jaguars coach already, or at least is close to it. And, you know, you see the way that the Jaguars are approaching it. The fact that he benched Fournette and they still won is impressive to me. Like, that's not something a lot of teams can get, a lot of bad organizations can get away with doing. And then let's not forget that when Doug Marrone was with the Bills, they were actually pretty good the year that he coached the Bills.
Yeah, no, it's fair. You know, they certainly had a decent enough year, and it wasn't like he got fired. He left because he felt like he had a better opportunity elsewhere. It didn't work out that way, but in the longer run, he's in a good spot. I'll finish with this. I mean, with the Jags and Rams, they're the two teams that are kind of taking the biggest leap forward this year in terms of performance after being very mediocre teams last year. The Jags are projected by Football Power Index here at ESPN to win 10.7 games, and the Rams are projected to win 10.6 games. The Eagles are at 12.4 wins. Obviously, they're not going to win half games, but round those all up, that would be the Jags at 11-5, Rams at 11-5, Eagles at 12-4. Who would you pick for Coach of the Year if that's what the records end up looking like at the end of the campaign?
So Jags at 11 and Rams at 12?
No, Jags at 11, Rams at 11, Eagles at 12.
Oh, if that was the case, then... And I like Doug Peterson's probably not getting it if those are equal records, because right, the success jump for me is much higher for the Rams and Jaguars. Yep. I think I would go Rams.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
McVay, the difference in what Jared Goff looks like from, and Lewis Riddick has been ahead of the curve on this a lot, in your ESPN colleague, and mm-hmm, but pointing it out, but it's just night and day. I mean, like, Jared Goff looks like a different quarterback. Todd Gurley looks like a different running back. And then my colleague, Amy Trask, actually named Sean McVay her midseason MVP, which wow, is insane because he's not a player, but totally logical because the midseason MVP is not a real award. And when you think about the way that he has built this team in terms of the way that he's built the staff in terms of hiring Wade Phillips, you know, having a 31-year-old going out and getting this, you know, son of bum has been coaching longer than Sean McVay's been alive. Mm-hmm. You know, he goes out and brings him in, and to get the play that he's gotten from Jared Goff, to the, you know, working with Les Snead to bring in Andrew Whitworth is a really nice signing, to trade for Robert Woods, to trade for Sammy Watkins, draft Cooper Kupp, the assemblage of talent there and the cohesion and the way that it's worked makes him, to me, the best coaching job, although there are other factors that go into it, but just the turnaround there in Los Angeles has been tremendous.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. I mean, I think I would take McVay as well. Let's finish up. Let's get to the final two awards. You usually think about them pretty similarly in terms of the MVP and Offensive Player of the Year consideration. A guy could win both awards. Do you think, let me ask you instead, do you think that the same player, assuming an Offensive Player wins MVP, which has been the case for seemingly decades now, do you think the same player should win MVP and Offensive Player of the Year, or should they be considered as separate awards and you should have the second best offensive player win Offensive Player of the Year?
I think they should be separate awards. And the main reason for that is that a quarterback 90% of the time is going to win the MVP. And I think it's unfair to a guy like David Johnson last year, or, you know, a guy like Chris Johnson when he ran for 2,000 yards, where they were probably the most impactful offensive player, but because things are tilted so heavily towards quarterbacks that they're going to be more valuable. So I like to have them separately, because I think you should reward – I even think it should be the offensive player of the year should be a non-quarterback, although I get that sometimes it can be a second-place MVP finish for certain players. I just like the idea that you recognize a skill position player who puts up massive numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's Ezekiel Elliott last year, he can't win MVP – because you got Brady and Ryan, but I mean, like, you know, the impact he had was incredible. So I like the idea that it's separate, and I think I would lean Kareem Hunt as offensive player of the year, leading in yards of scrimmage right now, and leading in rushing yards. So it's hard not to do that.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying like actually the most productive offensive player of the year?
Yes. Like who had the best offensive season, even if it was like Isaiah Crowell on a winless Browns team. If he rushed for 2,000 yards on a winless Browns team, which would be incredible to watch. I mean, I don't even know if that's possible, but like he should get it for having the biggest offensive season, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would give that serious consideration. I think they should just be a little more upfront about it and just spell it out to that way where it's okay, well, you know, it's not just the... there's no offensive player there. I'm not sure what the terms are, you know? It's not like it's... It doesn't say, well, it's the most productive player or the most valuable player. It theoretically includes value, but I don't know how to apply that to offensive player of the year. I had two quarterbacks. I had Brady as the offensive player of the year, and then Carson Wentz as my MVP. So it seems like MVP might be the easier discussion right now. I mean, are you taking Wentz as your most valuable player in the league at the moment?
Well, I made the picks for – we made our CBS picks. Right after week 8, and yes. I actually took Alex Smith as MVP.
Wow.
I think Wentz, Brady, and Smith were the three choices that you had to make there. And for me, it was about, this is kind of cheating, but I don't care. For me, I don't think that Alex Smith is going to be in the discussion at the end of the year for the MVP. I think he'll be on the fringe of it, but he's not going to be one of the guys. Like I think Wentz and Brady have more staying power. I think you have Dak Prescott and Russell Wilson and Drew Brees lingering on the outside there and poised to make a run. And so I think Smith is ultimately going to be out of it. So I kind of wanted to reward him for a great first half. And the fact that he's throwing the ball downfield more, he's operating this offense. When you watch Wentz against a really good Broncos defense, what we believe is a really good Broncos defense, light them up for 51 points. It is really hard not to go with Wentz if I was making the decision in week 9. I think all those – and look, that's recency bias too, Bill, because Tom Brady didn't play. You know, if Carson Wentz had been on bye and Tom Brady had thrown for 4 touchdowns against the Broncos, which he'll have a chance to do on the road in week 10, maybe I would lean back towards Brady. And that's – I think it's just that close right now in terms of these quarterbacks. So I took Smith after week 8. I would probably take Wentz after week 9. And if Tom Brady has a huge week on Sunday Night Football, I might get Brady after week 10. I think it's close. Tom Brady's done it with, you don't want to say not a lot of help, but I mean it's been a difficult season for Brady, losing Julian Edelman out of the start with a terrible defense. And I think Wentz is getting a lot of help from coaching. He got getting a lot of help from additions in the offseason and getting a lot of help from a defensive line that might be the best in football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do agree with you. Now, if I'm going to put Brady and Wentz into one bucket and the whole field, everyone else, into the other bucket, would you rather have Brady and Wentz in terms of picking an MVP, or would you rather have the field?
I will take the field because really? I do think – yeah, here's the thing, right? Brady – It wouldn't be surprising at all if Brady kept up this hot stretch for the rest of the season and the Patriots won. But if you – Bill Belichick got mad about that. What was that? He was like, you know, do you like those low-scoring games, Bill? He's like, I like winning. It feels like they might be trying to maybe tamper down the area. They might be – I could see them trying to become a run-heavy team or a more – short passing heavy team and minimize the big plays in order to keep their defense off the field down the stretch and to get better defensively. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Brady's stats sort of depressed a little bit. Efficiency-wise, he'll probably be fine, but the, you know, the counting stats matter for these votes. Wentz, I think, almost has to regress just a little bit back to the mean. And I just wouldn't be surprised at all if a situation unfolds where Zeke Elliott's suspended and Dak Prescott has to take the reins and the Cowboys keep winning and Dak keeps putting up big numbers. Or if Drew Brees goes on a hot stretch here and they start throwing the ball a little bit more and all of a sudden Brees is the perfect candidate if Wentz and Brady don't have monster second halves. Brees is the perfect candidate for a lifetime achievement MVP award this season, I think.
Yeah, I do agree with you. And I wanted – that was my idea when I was thinking about doing this column. Not only in week four, but then also in week nine. And I thought, yeah, it makes sense. The defense is playing better. They're going to have a nice record. You would figure he's going to be – get that kind of attention as like that lifetime achievement award candidate. I just – he's not playing well enough. You know, I have Drew Brees on my fantasy team. I watch every week the Saints very closely for that exact reason. I mean, he's throwing too many interceptions over the last 3 weeks, and he's missing too many throws. He had Ted Ginn for an 88-yard touchdown. I paid very close attention to this as someone who had Drew Brees and Ted Ginn in my fantasy lineup this week. And he missed the throw. I mean, he had Ted Ginn running free for 4 or 5 yards. It wasn't as bad as Julio Jones's drop, but it was the second worst, like, wide open receiver who did not end up in a touchdown play of the week. Obviously, it was Breeze's fault. I felt like, as opposed to Ted Ginn's fault when in the line of play, was obviously Julio Jones's fault. I think he has to play better for them to really consider him for being MVP. He doesn't have to have the best stats. I don't think he has to have that. But if they go 11-5, which right now they are projected to finish to 10.9 wins, so 11-5 essentially, and he has to at least approach Wentz's stats. Unless Wentz totally falls on his face and unless the Eagles, you know, finish 9-7 or 10-6 and just totally collapse, you'd figure the Eagles are going to be in such good shape and have such a, you know, Wentz is going to have good enough numbers that Breeze is really going to have to be, really have to step up to be competitive with Wentz for me.
I agree with you. I just want to point out too that with Breeze, this is a fascinating little juxtaposition for him because this is his lowest volume season in terms of passing yards. I mean,
yeah,
led the league in 4 of the last 5 years. He's averaging 276.8 passing yards per game through 8 games. Wow. The last time he was under 277 was 2007, his second year in New Orleans, when he had 276.4 yards passing per game. So this would be his lowest since that time. And then the funny thing about that is the year before, his first year in New Orleans, he was at 276.1. But he led the league in passing yards per game at 276.1. Think about that. There's nobody close to it. I mean, sure, right? 276 would be, like, Breeze is probably in 10th place right now in terms of passing yards per game at 276. I can't imagine, maybe he's top five, but I can't imagine that would be, or he's fifth, yeah. But that's still, you know, that's not even close to the pace you see in 2017.
Yeah, it's just a different game at this point. And part of that is because Drew Brees was so effective throwing the football. I mean, I've written about Andy Reid in years past as like someone who, you know, really anticipated the way the league was changing. And Drew Brees is another one of those guys where it's just he's a totally different, you know, totally different quarterback in terms of he's the same quarterback, but the league has changed around him in the process. Yeah, I mean, I do think those are going to be the guys. You know, maybe Jared Goff sneaks into the discussion if the Rams go on another hot streak. Alex Smith, I think, will definitely, you know, engender some support and deserve some support in terms of what he might do over the second half of the season. Obviously, he threw his first interception yesterday in that loss, but 18 touchdowns against one pick. If he finishes the year with 36 touchdowns and 2 interceptions, I think he's certainly in the discussion if the Chiefs have a pretty hot second half. So I'm going to say Wentz for MVP, and I have Brady as offensive player of the year. You have, do you think Wentz is the favorite for you in MVP, or you're going with Hunt for offensive player of the year, but who is your MVP pick?
I went Smith the week ago. I would go Wentz right now. If I was
picking. That's right now.
I would take, it is right now. I will take Wentz, and I think he's the favorite. We have this fascination with, you know, not fresh blood, but, you know, like we want a new face, and Wentz has burst on the scene, and the Eagles are putting up points in gobs. So I think he is the favorite right now, and people would love the idea of him winning, but I ultimately would take the field, I think, because of because the recency bias does play a factor in it.
All right, so let's move on. Let's finish up with the playoff picture right now. Let me go with sort of the main, let's start with the division leaders. I think the wild card races are more interesting. There are seven teams right now, according to the ESPN Football Power Index, who have about a 70% chance or better of winning their division. I want to know if you agree with them. Steelers at 96.7% to win the North. I think that's pretty fair, no?
A little low.
Fair. It's hard to imagine. Yeah, they lost.
They're coasting that division.
Yeah. They're already 2.5 games ahead of the Ravens with, I believe, the tiebreaker there in the AFC North. So it's pretty much still up there. Chiefs at 92.4%.
Yeah, this is one that I think is at least worth watching because the Raiders won, and I won't let the Chargers thing die. I don't think anybody's going to catch them, but the Chiefs have lost three straight, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they've lost to good teams, so you don't want to bash them too much. But we have seen a Chiefs. It wouldn't be surprising if an injury happened to one of the. Whether it's Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, or Kareem Hunt, that really derailed that offense or caused that offense's ceiling to shrink a little bit. And that defense is showing some holes. So I think you can make a case that the Chiefs, sure, they're definitely the favorite to win that division, but I wouldn't be stunned if either the Raiders or the Chargers ripped off a bunch of wins and made it at least competitive or even caught them.
What if Alex Smith gets hurt? And we have a Colin Kaepernick situation again with Patrick Mahomes, where Mahomes takes over and is suddenly playing at a high level.
I have heard, Bill, at least, I don't remember who, it was somebody on my podcast, the Pick Six podcast on CBS. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which one of those Mouseketeers said it, but one of them threw out Mahomes. And then I was like, man, this is, I think it was Nick Costas, I think he threw out Mahomes. But then I heard Peter Schrager do it on NFL Network this morning. He's kind of joking, but on NFL AM or Good Morning Football, he's like, little Patrick Mahomes. If the Chiefs lose two more games, Alex Smith is not the problem, but Andy Reid has done this before.
Mm-hmm.
Would he consider, if the Chiefs fell to 6-5, would he go to Mahomes? Any chance?
I can't think he will. If Alex Smith gets injured, I mean, of course, you go to Mahomes, and then if he plays well,
right.
If Mahomes plays well, then you have a very tough decision, because I don't think you can bench Alex Smith for Mahomes, given how well Alex Smith was playing, but stranger things have happened. Like you said, I mean, this is something that comes up all the time, and usually teams do right with the hot hand. I mean, Tony Romo didn't get his job back. Alex Smith didn't get his job back in San Francisco. It would not be out of the question by any means. Patriots, 90.2% at 6-2.
Yeah, they are certainly winning the division, although, it's been more interesting than anybody could have possibly imagined.
For sure. Eagles at 8-1, 87.2% chance of winning the East.
That's about right, but they do have to play Dallas twice, which is fascinating from the entire playoff perspective thing, because they're the only division leader in the NFC, I think, that has to, like, the Saints and Panthers already played, and the Seahawks and Rams already played. So Dallas has two opportunities to catch them there. Conversely, Philly has two opportunities to really make it difficult for Dallas to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think if Eagles win one of those two games, they're going to be in great shape. Vikings, 78.4% to win the NFC North.
I would go a little bit higher, and we're recording this on Monday. If the Lions can steal a win in Lambeau, I don't know why I can't pronounce Lambeau right, but they would. Both of those teams would be 4-4, and Minnesota would be in a very choice position. I think Minnesota is the better team, and unlike everybody else, they have reinforcements potentially coming in the form of Teddy Bridgewater or Sam Bradford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jags, 71.3%. Even though they're tied with Tennessee at 5-3 atop the North.
That's way too high.
Way too high.
Right? Did they play the Titans? I can't remember that either.
They lost to Tennessee in week 2.
Yeah, but how is it? But they have the world's easiest schedule going in. They have to play. They played 9 games, right? And they have to play. Or they played 8 games, and they have. So that means they have 8 left. 4 of them are against the Browns, the 49ers, the Colts, and the Texans. If they don't get to 10 wins, it's insane. I like Tennessee better, I think, even though that defense is a problem, just because I tend to trust offense a little bit more. But look, Jacksonville's defense looks great, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if they won the division. They are shattering their over-under were 6.5, and they are shattering it. I still think it should be closer to 50-50 with Tennessee holding the head-to-head advantage, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do agree that Jacksonville should be favored. I wouldn't put them as high as perhaps the Football Power Index seems to indicate. The Saints, 69.9%. We're going to round up and say 70% for purposes of not encouraging the internet. But let's say 70%.
Not niceness?
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. I don't get that. That seems to be a thing. 70%, let's say, for the Saints to win the NFC South. Are you buying that?
That's a little too high. I really like New Orleans. They beat the Panthers straight up in Carolina. Mm-hmm. But Carolina, to me, is the team, again, with reinforcements. You know, they have jettisoned Kelvin Benjamin. It's a big trade, the former first-round pick and the number one receiver, but I'm not sure that he is great. Mm-hmm. It's going to allow Curtis Samuel and Christian McCaffrey more plays. It's going to keep – I think Cam Newton may have spent too much time focusing on Kelvin Benjamin as sort of the primary target. And
interesting.
That may have – yeah, if you think about – they went to the Super Bowl with worse weapons. And Ted Ginn was there, of course, and Greg Olsen. But when Kelvin Benjamin was out, he played his best football. And I wonder if he might not do that moving forward. They need Olsen back. If Olsen comes back in Week 12, that offense changes pretty dramatically too. They need to start running the ball a little bit better. And mm-hmm. Cam Newton almost – I think he's almost matched his rushing attempts – yards and touchdown totals from last year. So much for that little fun offseason narrative. I think New Orleans is probably closer to 50% for me too, just because Carolina. I don't think Carolina is going away yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do agree with you there. And then the NFC West is a crapshoot. 50-50 and even 50% for the Rams, 49.6% for the Seahawks. The Cardinals are the other. They're at 0.5%. I'm going to rule the Cardinals out. That's just my opinion. Rams and Seahawks. Rams 6-2, Seahawks 5-3, but the Seahawks do have the tiebreaker between those two teams. Who do you have as your pick coming out of the NFC West?
The Cardinals are 4-4. They're the worst 4-4 team in NFL history, right? I mean, they have. It's horrible.
Beating
San Francisco twice, once in overtime, beating the Colts, and then, what was their other win's terrible too, isn't it? They throttled the Buccaneers. Their wins are terrible.
Would you put them ahead of the Miami Dolphins in terms of worst 4-4 team in league history?
Yeah, I would actually. So never mind. The second worst team, second worst 4-4. We live in the golden age of mediocrity. So, two worst 4-4 teams right in our midst, and we didn't even know it. I think I'll take the Rams. Earl Thomas being out is a concern,
mm-hmm.
and. Russell Wilson is going to get his name involved in that MVP discussion at some point, but he didn't play really well for the first 3 weeks. Their running game hadn't been able to get going. Rawls, nice little shot in the arm, but I think the Rams are a more complete team than the Seahawks, and that seems insane to say, but you can't just say the Seahawks are a better team because of the evidence we have from the previous 5 years. You know, the Rams are. We have 8 weeks of or 9 weeks of evidence that shows us that the Rams are a really good football team, and we have to. You can only deny it for so long before you end up like that dog in that meme where your house is burning.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Look at the numbers. The Rams are a much better team so far this season, and you're looking at. Basically, you're hoping that the Seahawks kind of have that second half bounce if you're a Seahawks fan, that they seem to always have year after year. I don't know if that's a real thing, to be honest with you, if I'm being the nerd in this discussion. But I mean, you know, it does seem to happen year after year. So we'll say there's some possibility of that happening. But you mentioned the schedule for the Jags. The Rams' schedule over the next half of the year is not exactly too painful. They play the Texans this week without Watson, obviously, Tom Savage, our quarterback. At Minnesota, hosting the Orleans, they still have the Eagles and Seahawks to play. Those are tough matchups. Their other games, though, at Arizona with Drew Stanton, they play the Niners, and they're at Tennessee, which is a pretty tough matchup. So there's a mix of really easy games. You'd figure Houston, San Francisco, Arizona are going to be easy games, and the rest of their schedule is a lot tougher for the Seahawks. Rest of their slate, when it comes to they play, they're at the Niners. They have to travel to Jacksonville to play the Jags, which suddenly seems like a scary matchup. They have the Cowboys, They have another game against the Rams. They have Atlanta, who, you know, are struggling but are still a competitive team, still gave the Seahawks a fit last year. And they play Arizona on a short week this week. So, I mean, the schedules are relatively similar. I thought the Rams schedule might be a little bit easier, but I do think that the Rams just, they've been a better team this year. And so, again,
the idea, too, that the Seahawks bounce is always predicated on the defense playing at an elite level and the offensive line taking half a season to really find itself. It's not going to happen. I mean, like, they got Dwayne Brown. That's great. I mean, like, they're going to be better, but I mean, it's just hard to fathom. I don't think that they have the same pieces intact to just magically start to grind people out in the running game. Now, I mean, look, they can go on a tear, but if Cooper Kupp catches that pass against the Seahawks, we're talking about a situation where Seattle is
4-4,
and the Rams are 7-1.
Yeah,
and it's just the only thing on your television is the Wentz or Goff or Wentz debate, and you know NFC championship preview, and the Rams look like they've locked up the division. So, ifs and ands and all that. But yeah, I think it's asking too much. I like the Rams in that position. And by the way, the Buccaneers have announced that they're shutting down Jameis Winston for a few weeks. Good move or bad move?
How are they going to tell the difference between the previous Jameis Winston and the current Jameis Winston?
I like the move because you can't Andrew Luck this situation when you're sitting at 2-6, and that's what it feels like to me. And he has been horrible this year, so I like the move, but that's a freebie. I think the Saints and the Panthers both get the Buccaneers only once, so there's no real competitive advantage in that division.
For if you were a baker at a chef in the Tampa area, would you start making W cookies for people to eat?
W pretzels, right?
I mean, really pretzels?
I would make, but like, you know, I think you could make you could shape a pretzel shape of a W.
That's true. That's way easier.
Yeah, and it would, because Jameis is like, he did the weird thing where he like crossed the fingers over one another that looked a little pretzely. Generally speaking, as a good rule of thumb, you don't want to. I don't know that the whole there was multiple moments within that speech from Jameis that either seemed to cross a line into NSFW and yet also just dance on the edge of utter confusion for his teammates. You're like, why would we eat a W? Nobody's eating W's. The line I wrote about that a little bit last night, and the only, I hate to quote Anchorman like I'm some 36-year-old dad who's, I mean, I don't understand Spanish, Baxter. That was the kind of moment it was. Like, what are you talking about, Jameis? Nobody got you. Like, the younger dudes on the team didn't get you. The dudes your age didn't get you. Older guys on the internet didn't get you. The whole world was confused. Nobody eats W's. It was very, very weird.
You know what? It felt like a thing where he was trying to brand something, where he was like, I'm gonna trademark eat the W, and we're gonna win today, and we're gonna go on a big streak here, and I'm gonna make some money off this side hustle I have here. But yeah, did not work super well. So that covers the divisions. Then we have four wild card spots, obviously. It seems like you would figure, even though the Seahawks are not playing their best football, you would think the loser of that NFC West debate between the Rams and Seahawks would be in line for a wild card spot, no?
Yeah, I think so. I think the NFC is fascinating to me because I touched on this at the very top of it, but I think that we have discovered that, and I'm leaving the Vikings out of this because the Vikings have a good defense. I think they're going to win that division, so I'm not really worried about them for the purposes of the discussion. But
okay.
I think we've figured out there's six good teams in the NFC. And you have the Panthers and the Saints in the South, the Eagles and the Cowboys in the East, and then probably the Seahawks and definitely the Rams in the West. Now, only five of those teams can make the playoffs because we have to have somebody from the North. So the question is, which one of those teams is going to find themselves on the outside looking in? I think that if I were picking a team to be most likely to be left out, it would actually be the Cowboys because, as I noted, they have to play the Eagles twice. And, you know, so if they were to lose both of those games, they would be in a pretty devastating spot. The division would obviously be over, and more than likely You know, they would have a lot of ground to make up in the wild card, and they're also losing Zeke Elliott. So I guess if I'm picking the teams I like for the wild card at this point, it would be I think Carolina and Seattle would have to be my clubhouse leaders, although clearly the Cowboys are in right now. Seattle's not.
That's really interesting. That's a really tough one to gauge. I don't know who I would pick. Off the top of my head, not thinking about anything besides just what are my opinions of these teams, I think I would pick Carolina. Yeah, in terms of, I do think the Cowboys are better in a vacuum than the Panthers, but there are a couple things that go into play there. You think about the Cowboys, they're 5-3, Carolina is 6-3, so they already have that extra win in the bank, and you figure the Cowboys, you know, pick up that extra win over the course of the year, but we can't be positive. Who knows? You mentioned Zeke Elliott, and I'm someone who thinks running backs are so overrated, but I do think Zeke Elliott is a big difference between, a much better player than Alfred Morris or Darren McFadden or Rod Smith. Whoever is going to be playing running back for the Cowboys is going to be a step down from Zeke. And I do think that the Panthers have a pretty easy schedule the rest of the way. I mean, they have 4 of their final 7 games at home. They get the Dolphins, the Jets, the Packers, presumably without Aaron Rodgers. It'll be week 15. That'll be right around the time where Aaron Rodgers could be in line to come back, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And they play Tampa, who is not playing good football right now. They're at Atlanta, they're at the Jets, and they're at the Saints. So if I were the Panthers, I wish I would have had that week 13 game against the Saints at home as opposed to in New Orleans. But look at Dallas's schedule. Like you said, 2 games against Philadelphia. They are at the Falcons, they're at the Raiders, they host the Seahawks. They host the Chargers, who knows what team is going to show up for the Chargers. They could outplay Dallas, and they could be the worst team in football. Anything is possible when it comes to the Los Angeles Chargers. So I do think the schedule and the absence of Zeke Elliott makes it more likely the Panthers are that final playoff team. Is there anyone totally outside that group who you think would slip in? If you had to pick one, I guess wildcard team is the wrong word, but one sort of totally out of the blue character, would you pick anyone else?
The Redskins, I guess, are the team that you have to pick. Maybe somebody – you could say the Packers. I mean, look, I don't want to suggest that – I like to wait at least like 24 hours before I look like a moron. But, you know, maybe Brett Hundley looks good on Monday night and plays well, and then you can sort of bridge the gap and keep the Packers alive. You know, if they won, they'd be – if they beat the Lions on Monday night and they're 5-3, they're right there with the Vikings – and there's no really dangerous quarterback in there, so you could see them. I mean, they're right there in the wild card race too. I mean, they can certainly get involved in that discussion. And we're probably doing a disservice to the Falcons, who have looked completely discombobulated, but you know, managed to. I'm looking at old standings. Why? How did I have old standings up? Yeah, I mean, the Falcons are 4-4. Yeah. I don't know how I had old standings up. That's weird.
How old were they?
They hadn't refreshed. It was like they were like 4-3 and 1-1.
I thought they were there from like 1979. I was like, oh boy.
Listen, the Falcons are 1-10, and they can make a run. I think the Falcons. There's a presumption that the Falcons can get it together on offense. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's correct, but I mean, they certainly could make some sort of run, and it would be all time comedic level if the Cardinals collapse on. But I think the Redskins has to be that team at 4-4 right there on the fringe that can make some noise and get involved. A huge, huge season-saving win in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that's fair. On the flip side, think about the AFC. Who are your 2 wild card picks right now from the AFC?
Boy, the AFC is less attractive.
It is.
So right now,
top-heavy
the
division.
Actual wild card teams are the Jaguars and Bills. Am I... These are my updated standings. These are not 1975.
No, Jaguars and Bills are your 2 wild card teams right now.
Okay, well, it Bill, this is a weird year. If it looks like 2 AFC South teams are going to get in, I cannot trust the Baltimore Ravens, the Cincinnati Bengals, or the Cleveland Browns. I think Pittsburgh runs away with that division. I still think Buffalo is going to come back to earth a little bit. Miami's not good. The Jets are trying hard. I'm gonna go out on a limb, and I'm gonna say that my 2 wild card teams coming out of the AFC this year will be the Tennessee Titans and the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah, I was hoping you were gonna go Chargers.
But if you look at it, it's I don't want to say it's not that crazy. One of those West teams can get frisky and make a run at the – there's going to be a bad division. There's going to be one very bad wild card team coming out of the AFC.
Mm-hmm. I do agree with you there 100%. I'm happy you picked the Chargers because that means I don't have to pick the Chargers to make us a wild card team. They're 16.8% chance according to the Football Power Index, so it's certainly not crazy to imagine
that's
the Chargers getting
there. That's 3-5 team halfway through the season. That is really high for a 3-5 team.
It is, but this is a very wide open AFC wild card race. I think, the Dolphins could string together enough crazy luck to win. They look better last night, certainly, but I'd rule the Dolphins out. Jets' schedule's too tough. Bengals, I just are a mess right now. They could make a run again, but I'm skeptical. Browns are out for me. Colts are the Colts. The Texans, the Tom Savage situation ruins them, and they're not considering Colin Kaepernick right now, so I don't think they have a path to a decent quarterback. The Broncos, they have a defense where if they stop turning the football over on offense, they could theoretically get something going, given how good their defense typically is, but it does seem like they're just going significantly south right now. Chargers are plausible. The Raiders, the Raiders are a better team perhaps in some ways than their record. I do think that they have enough talent that if they can get their defense figured out and kind of, start streamlining their offense, they're totally plausible to me as the sixth team in the conference. They have 11.0% chance according to the Football Power Index. They're really struggling. I'm going to say
their schedule is hard.
That's the other part of it. Yeah, I'm going to say Tennessee as my one wild card team, and then who do I want to? I'm going to say Bills.
All right.
I'm going to say Bills. I want to see in the playoffs this year, I want to see the Bills traveling to Jacksonville to play against the Jaguars in the wild card round.
You sadist. But it doesn't matter. who do you, at that point, that's a weird, it's a pretty weird situation for both Vegas. Like, what is that line when Buffalo and Tyrod Taylor go to Jacksonville to play Blake Bortles? You have to take Buffalo, right? You can't bet on Blake Bortles in the playoffs. You just can't.
It would be scary, wouldn't it? The total would be like 37. Like, it'd be a crazy low total for Bills, Jags. I wouldn't want to give points with Blake Bortles in the playoffs, and that's not what I would do under any circumstances. But I think that'd be really interesting. I think it'd be a weird defensively minded game. And then you have Chiefs and the Chiefs and the Titans, you would figure. They could have Steelers Titans or Patriots Titans, but I think the Chiefs are probably the third seed right now in the NFC, in the AFC for me. So I think that'd be really interesting. Because you'd have two really interesting running games and a team that might be able to get the ball away from Marcus Peters and avoid turnovers against that Chiefs defense. This has been really fun. I'm really excited for the second half now, which I can't say I was before we did this podcast. But a lot of stuff to happen. Who knew there were six good NFC teams?
I did, apparently. there's seven if you count the Vikings. And if the Vikings, I think the one thing that we can take away from this, Bill, is that as much it's people are really out in 2017 to try and make football less fun. I don't want it. I don't need it. Okay, you know what? There's enough stuff in life that's not fun right now, mm-hmm. and in general in the world that football can stay fun. So the people out there who are trying to act like football stinks and complain about the ratings, I don't need you. I don't need you in my life. So yeah. We got good NFC teams, and we've got one just terrible AFC team that is going to creep into the playoffs and not host a game, but at least be involved in a playoff game. So I think it's going to be a fun second half. And as the other thing too is like the bigger, what about the quarterbacks? We have a quarterback problem in the NFL. No, like we have Carson Wentz and Jared Goff and Dak Prescott emerging before our very eyes. We don't have a quarterback problem. We have young stars coming. So, that is me being irrationally optimistic on a Monday afternoon.
I don't blame you. I'm with you. Again, some bad football, sure, but there's always been bad football. Growing up as a Giants fan, in the Dave Brown and Kent Graham days, have conditioned me to believe that most football actually is bad. But really exciting stuff. Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people check out more of what you're working on?
Thanks for having me. At Twitter, at Will Brinson. Sorting the Sunday Pile, I write every Sunday, breaking down the weekly action. And we have the Pick 6 podcast, which people can subscribe to on iTunes. They should also subscribe to your podcast on iTunes, as I do. Although the new podcast app has been very wonky and keeps unsubscribing me from everything.
Big mistake. New podcast app. Will, thank you so much for coming on. I'm sure I'll have you back on later on in the year. We'll be talking more about the playoff picture, but always good to have you on the show.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for checking out today's episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. More coming later on this week. Of course, I'm on the Nickel Package every Wednesday, talking a little bit more specific stuff. We're going to get to the Giants and their struggles with Jeff Schwartz and some other stuff happening there. And then we're going to have another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show later this week. So more podcasts coming.